don't quite have a quorum yet, but what I'll do in the interest of time is have you present the bill and take any questions from members that are present, and then once we get a quorum, we'll officially convene and take action on the bill. So with that, Representative Leader, if you could go over House File 1797 for us then, and this is one that has a timeline, and one of the reasons that we happen to be meeting today, because the bill has to be done by March the 31st, and it has to get through Ways and Means as well, and so by the time we do the floor referrals and so on, it's a fairly tight timeline. And by the way, members, we are on TV, so if you could watch the cell phones. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, House File 1797 is sometimes referred to as a stimulus bill, or we like to say recovery bill, because it relates to the federal package. And Mr. Chair, to bring it right to the situation it is, I have an amendment, but I'll just explain, it won't move it. But what the amendment does, it changes the, in the bill, it says American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. That includes the entire package. What we're concerned about is that portion that deals with the transportation, and that is Title II of Law 111-5. So that would be the change in the amendment, and that's all it does, is make certain it relates to transportation and not to all the recovery packages, you know, health care and education and all that. That's basically the amendment that would bring that bill into that order. And what the bill does, it provides that the Commissioner of Transportation can spend that recovery money, because under our statute, the Commissioner MnDOT cannot spend any money unless it's authorized by the legislature. And what this bill does is the authorization for the Commissioner of Transportation to spend that money. It also indicates that he should, in this case, he or the Commissioner shall comply with all federal regulations, and that the Commissioner should also attempt to get any additional money that they can. And one other provision in the bill deals with the portion of the transportation monies that deal with airports. Normal, in state statute, we have a provision for matching monies of 80-20. The federal package now allows that it's 100%. So this, we would have to delete the matching portion for that airports provision. That's basically the law, or the bill, Mr. Chair. And as you pointed out, we need to get it to the governor before the end of the month. And the one other thing it mandates, report to the legislature, as it does on the other bills. Normally, as they report to the chairs of the respective committees.
Okay, Representative Vista.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Leader, you used an interesting word in the word authorize, and that this bill. I'm sorry, is this on? That this bill authorizes MnDOT. I wonder if it's your intention to provide authorization, or with the words in lines 1.17 and 1.18, you are not obligating the Commissioner of Transportation to expend the money. And that's two different things. Is the intention of this legislation to say that the Commissioner must spend the money, or is the intention of this legislation to give the Commissioner the discretion to decide whether or not to spend the money?
Leader, Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative Biskin, 1.17 and 1.18 deal with additional funds under the Act, and I don't know if I'm qualified to say if this authorizes or gives him the discretion. I could... We have Mr. Burris here. Mr. Chair, I could refer to him.
Okay.
If I may.
Yes, that would be fine. And if you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Matt Burris with House Research. Paragraph B of the bill, which is lines 1.7 and 1.8, is a requirement of the commissioner to make every effort to seek and utilize all funds available under the Act. And as Representative Leader mentioned that that goes to additional funds that are subsequently made available beyond the amount that we currently know that the state is getting. So that paragraph goes to the commissioner attempting to receive additional funds or making use of and attempting to receive additional funds.
Representative, thank you, Mr. Chair.
I guess I do have a question. In looking at the A1 amendment, we basically removed the words America Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and we inserted Title 12 of the Act. So I'm not quite sure how we are looking at additional funds unless additional money will be put into Title 12. So I do have a concern with that. Another concern that I have is the obligations that we are giving the Commissioner of Transportation to impose on the taxpayer, on the legislature, and consequently on taxpayers of Minnesota. I'll give you an example, Representative Leader. The Metropolitan Council's budget of 2009 went up millions of dollars unexpectedly due to obligations, ongoing obligations that they hadn't anticipated with the North Side Rail, including salaries and benefits of employees. So if we're not only giving authorization, but we're actually obligating. And this says, and I think I heard the testimony right, the third word is shall, right? It's not like we're saying you can look into it. We're saying you have to seek and utilize those funds. What we're doing then is potentially on capital projects, we are obligating the legislature to provide ongoing revenue. Otherwise, we're going to build tracks and trains and have no money to actually operate the thing. So I do have a big concern with that. Mr. Chair, I do have one other concern, if I can bring it up. Representative Leader, on line 21 of page 1, the commissioner may extend up to 17% of the funds for program delivery. Is the two words program delivery a new euphemism for administrative costs?
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair and Representative Biskin, basically that provides for engineering costs, right-of-way costs, environmental costs, contracts, administration costs, or anything in the administration of the contract.
Representative Biskin, if you don't mind, I'm going to have you hold for a moment because we now have a quorum, and I just want to convene the meeting and get the bill in proper order, and then we'll defer to you. So I'd like to officially convene the Finance Committee. And Representative Champion, would you move the division report?
I will. I move the Transportation Policy and Finance Division report for House File 1797.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Champion?
Yes, I move House File 1797 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and then we had an amendment that Representative Leader had proposed that we need to adopt as well. Representative Champion?
I move that we adopt the amendment that is that ends in A1 so that the bill is in the shape that the author would like for it to be.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion on the amendment? Representative Leader explained it earlier, so there are no questions. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. And then we have the minutes for March the 16th. Representative Biskins, you were one of the earlier ones here. Representative Biskins, care to move the minutes?
Yep, Mr. Chair, I have read them and I will move them.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Biskins, you had you were in the middle of some questions when we convened the meeting. So, Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence. And just one other question, and it has to do with the 17% for administrative costs. Representative Weider, I don't sit on Transportation Committee, so I don't know if that administrative percentage is high compared to most transportation programs and projects. I know it's very high in the area of education, where we're typically look between 5% and 8% of administrative costs. Is Representative Weider, my question is 17% unusual for transportation projects?
Mr. Chair and Representative Biskin, normally it depends on the type of project. If it's a bridge project or if it's a grading project or bituminous or whatever it is, it varies. Normally it's anywhere from 10 to 12% or higher, again, depending on how much design they need. And this is general, and it says up to, basically, so it does allow them to make that expenditure. That's correct. It would appear, like you say, it would appear abnormal, but just consider it because of all the different type of projects involved. They wouldn't spend that amount, but it allows them to do that depending on a particular project.
Any other discussion?
I have a question.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Leader or somebody else, and I don't understand all the language in the American Recovery Act, but could you explain to me, I know we have to approve the mechanism to take the money, to accept the money and start to distribute it, but why is it that we bypass the legislature by enacting this and go directly to the Commissioner of, for instance, Transportation?
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, this is normal for any expenditure for the department. The legislature does act on the same procedure. We have to authorize the expenditure.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Leader, that much I do understand. What I don't understand is you've added language in here where, it might be following up on Representative Biskin's question, but you've added language that includes dollars that have not yet been appropriated by the federal government and have not yet been authorized to the state of Minnesota. So you are not just through this doing what I've seen done, where you have to make a specific enactment to allow the spending of those federal dollars, but you're in essence bypassing the legislature for future dollars that could be appropriated.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, you are correct in a way, but this is a different circumstance. Basically, this comes through the department and the governor's office. It allows these expenditures to be made, and it's cut off in 2013. The other thing is they don't have a definite number in the event there are additional monies coming, and they assume there will be additional monies coming because some of the states that don't comply, that goes back into the pot of money and it's redistributed, so they don't have a number, really, to put a number on it.
And again, Mr. Chair, thank you very much, Representative Leader. I don't like it. I don't trust those guys, and it just seems to me that each time money is appropriated, it should come through the legislature. We should do our job, even if we may not understand everything that is connected with the money as it comes in and what project it's going to. But that was set up for a reason, and it just makes me uncomfortable that we would set something up that would bypass the legislative process and send it right to the department and the governor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, you're correct, but there's also the probability that we're not in session, and if some stimulus money comes, there are some restrictions on it. It has to be used within 90 days or 120 days, and in the event some of these monies come after we wouldn't be in session, that was the problem we had on the 35W bridge. We basically had to not come back in session, but there was a legislative... LAC can act to some degree, but not to a long-term extent. And I think, if I may point out, Mr. Chair, it's a concern that we're aware of and that the Senate is aware of, and in the process, I think we may have some language to accommodate what you're talking about.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Champion renews his motion that House File 1797 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
We'll now go to House File 1227. And Representative Clark, would you be willing to move the division report?
Right, Mr. Chair, I'll move that the Higher Education and Workforce Development Policy and Finance Division report for House File 1227, the first committee endorsement.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Clark.
And then I move that House File 1227, the first committee endorsement, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and I understand, Representative Mahoney, you'll be presenting the bill, of course, and there's an author's amendment. Would you like to put the author's amendment on now?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark, could you move the author's amendment?
The amendment that we have, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, the motion is before us. You want to mention what the amendment is?
The amendment to 1227, the amendment starts on page 3, line 8. It inserts step-parent and step-son and step-daughter. Line 4, page 4, line 27, it strikes wage credits were earned from and puts in weeks of employment and the base period includes. How shall I say this? It's more just dramatic or technical changes with the line 20, page 4, line 27, page 4, line 33, wage credits were earned from, is deleted in weeks of employment, again, just like above that. Page 9, line 32, deletes was, and deletes by spouse's employer. I'm going to quickly move to that. And so I make sure I say this correctly. What this is, it broadens it so that it can be used in the people that are caught up and have to move because of a spouse being relocated. This allows them, if your spouse can't find a job there or has to quit their job and leave, they can collect unemployment. In this, at difficult times, we need to make sure that everyone can, we can serve people as best as possible. And then page 10, delete lines 31 and 32, or 31 to 33, and insert, it's just, if the conduct for which the applicant is discharged, it's just pretty much comfort, changing it from one spot and it's an old concept rewritten. A little clearer, make the people at the UI department a little bit more comfortable with the way it's phrased. Mr. Chair and members, with that amendment on, I would take some time here to go through this. Section 1 allows individuals filing for unemployment benefits. It's a change in quarters. It is actually language that we passed and signed into law. This is just another, it's another copy of that. Section 2 defines the immediate family members, so that expands that, as I said in the amendment, to step-parents, step-sons, and step-daughters. Section 3 eliminates restrictions on apprentices, another bill that is moving through the process. This is just in a second place. Section 4, as the department calls it, comfort language, and with staff, they have confirmed that no actual change in law, but language is required to meet federal requirements. Section 5 is procedural statutes implementing Section 1. Again, that is passed and in law, signed by the governor. Section 6 lessens the paperwork from Section 1. That's not signed into law. That will have to be passed. Section 7 is lessening the restrictions on college students and collecting benefits. And in essence, this means that if right now you are required to quit school, this language allows you, if you are in school, to make other arrangements so you can finish and collect your credits in any appropriate manner. it's kind of a message to the men's school in the U of M and any particular schools that they should work with the unemployed. And sections 8 and 9 allow unemployment benefits to individuals who lose their job because they have to take care of a family member, an ill family member, and allows benefits to individuals who have to quit to relocate, which that was explained in the amendment. Section 10 authorizes the spending of federal stimulus dollars, the 9.9, to administer the unemployment insurance program because of the anticipation that it's going to be so much more work this year. And members, that's the bill.
Okay, we need to, Rep. Mahoney, actually adopt the amendment then. So any discussion on Rep. Clark's motion to adopt the amendment A2? All those in favor then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Any questions on the bill as amended? Seeing none, then.
I just had a question.
Oh, Rep. Clark.
Is there a legal definition of stepchild?
Rep. Clark, I'm sorry, we turned away from the mic.
I was wondering, is there a legal definition of stepchild?
Rep. Mahoney.
I'm not sure about an unemployment, but I know in the family law section there certainly is, and I don't know it off the top of my head.
Yes, I just wondered. Thank you.
Any further discussion, Representative Emmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, right at the end, and if you covered it while I was reading it, I'm sorry, but I didn't hear it. The federal conformity part at the end of the bill,
mm-hmm.
It says the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act provides Minnesota's Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund with a certain sum in incentive payments if certain changes are made in our insurance law. What are those changes?
Mr. Chair, I don't know the exact changes. I'm going to call up Mr. Lee Nelson from the UI department to go in a little bit more detail.
Mr. Nelson, welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. Mr. Chairman, Representative Emmer, basically all of the changes made in this bill are the ones necessary to achieve the stimulus, except for the two provisions regarding students. But otherwise, they are all required to meet the federal stimulus. The federal stimulus does allow the state various options, and this is the option which, let's just put it this way, is the least expensive option available for Minnesota to adopt to receive the incentive payment.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Nelson. That's what I was concerned with, because these are the so-called strings attached to the money that we're getting, and I'd like to know, when you say they're the least expensive, how much expense are they adding? And I'll give you an example, if I could. If you go to page 4, where you've changed, it's an issue, and I don't understand the detail, but you're computing the benefit based on their wage credit issue, and it's part-time versus full-time, and you've gone from average growth weekly to comparable wages, which, again, to somebody who doesn't understand the detail, it would appear to be a significant change. What kind of cost is that going to add to the program?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Emmer, that particular provision would have no cost because that's all in current law. The estimate is that these changes will cost, in additional benefits, approximately $1.5 million per year. And for that expense of $1.5 million, we receive incentive payments of $130 million.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nelson, we're receiving an incentive payment, or a cumulative amount of payments of $130 million for 1 year or the next 2 years?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it's a one-time payment of $130 million. It's a formula distribution. The total stimulus amount is $7 billion. Minnesota's share would amount to $130 million.
Mr.
Chair. Members.
Thank you. Mr. Nelson, once it nets out, so we take on the added $1.5 million a year. Once it nets out and the one-time money is gone, how do we pick that up? How does that get made up?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative, do the math, it's probably 70 years from now we would burn through the $130 million by this additional $1.5 million, then it would in fact be charged back to individual employers. But that's a large, an administration position is that the $130 million one-time money is worth spending $1.5 million a year for. But it would take 70 years to get to that burn through the $130 million by these additional costs. That's why the administration fully supports this, and the administration drafted this.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Nelson, I understand that, but that's based on where we're at right now. And what I'm concerned with is with the ever increasing number of persons that are out of work, and the decreasing number of businesses we have. I mean, have you done projections, and that's why you're able to say that we're going to maintain whatever rates we're at so that it goes 70 years out, or have we done any of that type of analysis?
Chairman, remember, these particular changes deal with things like the number of individuals who quit a job to take care of an ill family member, and it's necessary, medically necessary, that they quit to take care of this ill family member. I've had a few of those cases. Will that number of people quit in the future substantially increase? I suppose, but only when the workforce substantially increases. We don't expect there to be, you know, large numbers of people who that exception will apply to in the future. I guess it's the best way to explain it. I mean, we have limited situations in which people quit their jobs to take care of a dying spouse. And then the spouse passes away and they can't get reemployment and they're currently denied benefits under this bill. They would be allowed to collect unemployment benefits when they're, again, searching for a job. We don't think the number of people who fit that situation will expand dramatically in the future. That's why these are very narrow. Minnesota is already about 85% of the way there on the stimulus to get it. But you have to meet every I and dot every T to get the stimulus money. And that's why it's relatively minor changes in Minnesota in comparison to a number of other states. Minnesota's already 85% of the way there. And these changes, we feel, are relatively minor.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Nelson, thank you very much. I'm not challenging anything about what we're providing benefits for. My only concern is, regardless of how many people this would expand it to, you say this is an additional $1.5 million a year. I'm worried about, or concerned, as I think everybody else is, about the integrity of the overall system. That's all I was asking about, and that's why I asked if you've looked at the whole system. I thank you for your patience in responding to the question.
Representative Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nelson, was the changes brought forth on the A2 amendment also necessary for federal conformity?
Chairman, Representative, when this bill was initially drafted, well, it was drafted even prior to the President's signature on it, what happened, I can tell you, about a week ago, a little over a week ago, we received a 35-page memorandum from the Department of Labor on implementation of a one-page congressional enactment. And even after that, I spent about an hour on the phone with the Department of Labor trying to say that we didn't need some of these changes. The one the representative referred to in the amendment, where we use weeks of employment in the base period, their response was, but those are the words Congress used, therefore those are the exact same words you have to use, even though what you currently have does, in fact, means the same thing and does the same thing, but you're not using those words. And since the individuals I talk to on the phone are literally the individuals who will sign on, well, will draft the letter for the Secretary of Labor giving you the thumbs up or the thumbs down as to whether your law meets it, I thought it better to use the exact same words they're requiring rather than put us at risk using different words which have the same meaning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand a little bit of a 35-page response to a one-page authorization. Simply because I just yes or no, were all the changes made in the amendment necessary for compliance? In other words, particularly lines 1.3 and 1.4, were those words necessary to comply in order to get the stimulus dollars?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, no.
Thank you.
Is it?
That is? Okay. Any further discussion? Representative Raffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 10, there's a section where we have an amendment here. The conduct for which the applicant was discharged involved only a single incident. And just looking under this is under the employee misconduct defined section. Can you kind of explain the, I guess, the purpose of the background for this? Do you know?
Question for Mr. Nelson.
Yeah, or Representative Mahoney, if he prefers. Regardless, it just looks like we're saying that, well, even if a person is, I guess not say guilty, but
Mr.
there's no statement of fact that they are misconduct.
Mr. Chair, as I explained earlier, you know, if you look at what's deleted up on line 10.10, and then you look at the new language of 10.31, just rewriting an old concept to make the people at the unemployment insurance more comfortable, I guess. It's an old concept, something we've done for a long, long time. We're just rewriting it, I guess, clearer, or for us non-lawyers, a little bit less clear.
Okay, thanks. Any further discussion? Yeah. Well, seeing none, then Representative Clark renews her motion that House File 1227, the first committee in Grossman's, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We now have House File 878, Representative Hortman and Representative Campion. Do you have a couple of motions here for us?
I do. I move the Transportation Policy and Finance Report for House File 878.
Okay, the motion to adopt the division report is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Campion.
And I move House File 878 be recommended to pass and place on the general register.
See, the motion is before us. Representative Portman, if you'd like to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is a technical bill with policy changes from the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and I will let Eric Rudine from MnDOT explain those to you. But I would suggest that the committee entertain an amendment to delete Section 5. In the Senate, that section has been deleted, and if we delete it also, that will get rid of the need for a conference committee and get rid of these sort of non-controversial portions and give it to the governor's desk sooner rather than later. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce Mr. Rudine.
Would you like that motion made now to delete Section 5?
I would.
To put it in the order you'd like, then, Representative Campion, would you so move?
I move that we accept the oral, adopt the oral amendment that was made by the author.
To delete Section 5. Okay. Motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. If you could identify yourself for the record, then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Rudine with MnDOT Government Affairs. And I'll just briefly run through the bill and try to point out any cost items specifically. Section 1 will allow the department to officially file as part of the public record the location of a highway center line. There would be a small cost a filing fee associated with doing this, but we anticipate that the total cost for the department would be less than $1,000 per year. Section 2 of the bill deletes language requiring us to recalculate a city or county's money needs when they receive funding from the state park road account. Section 3 of the bill deletes language that would require the department to recalculate a county's money needs if they receive a variance from county stated highway standards. Section 4 deletes some obsolete language related to censuses. Section 5 was deleted. Section 6 deletes language requiring the department to recalculate a city's money needs if a variance from state aid standards has been granted. Section 7 of the bill defines expressway as a divided highway with partial control of access by reference, and Section 8 defines a freeway by reference as a divided highway with full control of access. Section 9 of the bill clarifies language requiring billboards to be located at least 500 feet from a limited access highway or from the interchange to a limited access highway. And then Section 10 would give the department review and comment authority on plat proposals along state rail link corridors. There could be a very small cost associated with Section 10 as well. And there could also be a very small savings associated with the changes we're making in Section 6, 5, and 4, 3, and 2 of the bill.
Okay, are there any questions of the author or Mr. Rudin? Okay, seeing none, Representative Champion renews his motion that House File 878, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Members.
And we have Representative Winkler with House File 111 and...
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Representative Kahn. I didn't see you sitting over there.
Okay, I move the State Government Finance Division report to House File 111 and it's the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us to adopt the committee report. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I move House File 111, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us, and if you could explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the bill essentially requires the State Board of Investment to divest its holdings in foreign companies that are doing business in the energy sector in Iran. Many of you may know that Iran is one of four nations that is on the U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism. Recently, in fact, just in 2009, there have been reports that Iran has acquired enough nuclear material to build a weapon. This bill is consistent with the foreign policy of the U.S. Currently, under federal law, U.S. companies are prohibited from doing business in Iran's energy sector. While a senator, Barack Obama, sponsored a bill to publish a list of such companies and to authorize states to do this kind of divestment. So it's consistent with Senator Obama's view on this matter. And in fact, since taking office, President Obama has issued sanctions on 11 companies that have been tied to banks, an Iran bank that has been helping in the energy sector there. Right now, 14 states have either passed legislation requiring this divestment or taken administrative action for this divestment, including much larger states like Florida and Arizona, at least in terms of their pension funds. There's signs that this works. The French energy company Total recently backed out of gas field project in Iran because of sanctions. The holdings affected by this bill amount to just about 1% of the total SBI holdings. There is an out in the bill which is that if Iran gets off the list of state sponsors of terrorism, or the Secretary of State of the United States declares that this provision is inconsistent with U.S. foreign policy, the law would no longer be valid. Further, the State Board of Investment would not be required to divest if it determines that doing so would not be in its fiduciary, would meet, allow it to meet its fiduciary obligations, in which case they would be required to pursue a shareholder resolution. Just quickly on the legislative process, the long and winding road, this was heard in the Government Operations Committee and passed and sent to the General Register. As part of the agreement to do that, the Senate author, Terry Bonoff, and I agreed to have a hearing at the Pension Commission on the bill. The Pension Commission didn't have possession of the bill, but they did have to hold an informational hearing and took an informal, I'd say, parliamentary free form, if you will, kind of vote on three suggested amendments to the bill. We then recalled the bill from the General Register, put it back in the Finance Committee, and in the State Government Finance Division adopted the three amendments, including a couple of changes suggested by Howard Bicker to the bill. And so now the bill, as you see it today, is one that has been pasteurized and homogenized by the Pension Commission, if you will, and is ready to go back to the General Register.
And that is the motion before us. So any discussion on the bill?
Sure.
Representative Tamar.
I'd just like to know, Representative Winkler, if this isn't something we're required to do by federal law. This is something that you as the author are taking the initiative to do. Is that correct?
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tamar, that is correct. This is not required by federal law.
Okay. And what you made in your testimony, you made comment about something working by other countries divesting from Iran. What does that mean, it's working?
In the sense, Mr. Chair, Representative Paymore, working in the sense that these kinds of decisions are discouraging foreign oil companies from doing work in the oil business, in the oil fields of Iran.
But
Representative
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, so you don't mean working and that Iran is changing its foreign policy based on these divestments.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tamar, I can say with some confidence that passing this bill won't make it more likely that Iran pursues nuclear material.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Winkler, you're speaking, maybe I'm conflicted about the Obama administration, but it seems to me at least, somewhat of a student of foreign policy, that the Obama administration is reaching out and at least, unlike in the last administration, is at least reaching out to the Iranian regime and hopes to negotiate, including its the issue of constructing a nuclear weapon. Is that not your read of the Obama administration?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tamar, I think that this is part of a two-part strategy that they're pursuing. One is to make their energy sector, which is the financial lifeline for their nuclear program, to try to squeeze that and at the same time make, I would say, diplomatic overtures. I think it's important to note that many of the companies that would be affected by this are Russian oil companies. And as you may have also followed, President Obama has suggested to Russia that we may pull back some of the missile defense posts that Russia particularly dislikes in exchange for their diplomatic help in Iran, and I think this would be consistent with that effort.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just going to make a comment. I mean, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about this, Representative Winkler. I mean, I don't want to sound like a hypocrite because back when I was a city council member, I remember authoring a bill on the apartheid regime in South Africa and divesting money from South Africa. And I think I voted for Representative Clark's bill in Sudan. But, you know, I as much as I despise the current president of Iran and not only anti-Semitic in my view, but he's a Holocaust denier, and I think that they're somewhat of a rogue regime. I'm not sure that this is really the best policy. Where does it stop? I mean, I could probably list a dozen different countries. We should probably do this
with, and is this something the state should be doing? I'm not sure. So I'm not sure. That's more of a comment rather than a question.
You represent Penn?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that things that Representative Winkler had said and that are also in the bill should save your doubts about it. First one is listing that this is on the list of terrorist countries, and then also stating that this ceases to affect if it comes off the list of terrorist countries. The second thing is that there's a lot of discretion given to the State Board of Investment as to how they want to go. And we're also, I think the other point he made that's really relevant is that we're not doing this alone. There are lots of other states and localities that have moved to do this. So we're kind of just joining them a little bit late.
Mr. Chair, the only comment I would have is I'm not too concerned about the slippery slope here, in part because there are only four states on that list, and the two bills that we have passed or will have passed if we pass this would be for genocide and nuclear terrorism, and I think it'd be fairly hard to get any other kind of policy standard that would reach to that level of foreign policy.
Representative Penn, are you?
I'm finished.
Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add a brief comment and a word of thanks to Representative Winkler for his work on this bill. I very much support the direction that Representative Winkler is taking us here. I'm proud to be a co-author on the bill. I think he's done a nice job explaining the whys, maybe in some greater detail in some of the previous committees. But I do think that when we're dealing with a terrorist state like Iran, it is important for us to do the little that we can as a state legislature. I'm one who is very reticent to ask the state legislature to ever wander into the field of foreign affairs, but this is an area where, as Representative Winkler has explained, then Senator Obama, now President Obama, has been supportive of states doing this, and states across the country have gone down this road, and I think that it's one of the few times when we can, as a state, express our concerns over the actions of foreign governments and make sure that our state investment funds are not invested in terrorist states, number one, that not only give us foreign policy concerns, but frankly, I think also should, certainly for me and should for people who are hoping to benefit from Minnesota pensions, give them some concern about the stability of the regime and the financial stability of those investments. So, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to express my support and thank Representative Winkler for his efforts, and look forward to seeing this bill on the floor in the very near future.
Okay, and Representative Junkie.
I maybe missed it. Who are the other terrorist states, and have we divested from them too?
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, it is Iran, Syria, North Korea, and Cuba. At least you and Representative Tom clearly have not completely divested from Cuba.
And the others.
Representative Junkie, was that?
And the others. I mean, that was one of the reasons given, Representative Amar brought up, that we should have one saying we should divest from terrorist states. So have we done this action in the state on the others?
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, I think that two things. One, specifically in regard to Iran, this is part of the U.S. foreign policy, and it's not the state of Minnesota making kind of a moral statement. It's the state of Minnesota getting in line with the foreign policy of the country. And two, Iran, I think, is a uniquely destabilizing country, both in the Middle East and in its ambitions, and as Representative Paymar stated, in the scope of what it is it hopes to do, both in the Middle East and to the United States, if possible.
So,
Representative Simon,
have we done this with the others or not?
No.
Thank you.
Representative Simon.
Well, I appreciate Representative Paymar's comment about the Obama administration wanting to help them in the seemingly new tech, but I have a different take on it. I think this does help a lot, actually, because if we're going to get them, if we're going to negotiate, we've got to negotiate with something. We've got to make them want something. they're not going to unilaterally give up their nuclear ambitions unless they get something they want. And if that something is made to be removing them from the terrorist list, I think it's in our interest to up the ante, to make being on the terrorist list a severe sanction and to make it hurt. And I think this helps make it hurt for their energy sector. I would say in terms of the other nations, I don't know that sanctions would really have much of a help on North Korea. There's not too much commerce over there. I don't know how many shopping malls there are in the greater Pyongyang area, but I don't think that that would be very, very useful. So I think this is, I see this as consistent with the Obama administration's aims. And if we're going to the negotiation table, we might as well make them want us to do something.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, and I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't also place on the record today that today is Persian New Year, and to wish Happy New Year to all of our Iranian Persian friends. Happy New Year. And I think it's important that when we're talking about language like this, that we also make sure that we honor the spirit that actually President Obama did today when he gave a message, a videotape to the people of Iran in which he wished them Happy New Year and said, you know, that he hoped that we would be working towards peaceful means together. And I just want to make sure that, you know, our Iranian Minnesotans know that we have that side of ourselves too.
Okay, and Representative Winkler, any concluding comments? I think we're down through the list.
Okay, Mr. Chair, no concluding comments other than to just be clear for Representative Clark that in Section 1, Subdivision 7, there are a list of exceptions to companies that this does not apply to, including those engaged in supplying goods and services intended to relieve human suffering in Iran. So the goal is not to target the Iranian people.
Okay, the motion then is renewed by Representative Winkler that House File 111, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We just got a 10:30 Monday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you've got it on the agenda, yes. Remember, 10:30 a.m. on Monday, and then we're also going to meet Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock. That's the good news. We do have some timing issues that we have to process the bills, and that's available time. 10:30 and 8, Monday and Tuesday. And with that, meeting adjourned.